Good afternoon, America. Bad afternoon, America. Sad afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington. Doing my best for the last 18 months to bring you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. And everyone listening to my voice knows why I'm not. 24 hours ago, I was. What a difference a day makes. I was citing to you the latest exit polls that I had gotten from numerous sources on the web, showing that John Kerry was projected to win the election, the popular vote. Well, obviously, those projections did not mesh with the final results. And I guess I want to apologize to you, first of all, for reporting them. They seem to have been inaccurate. My only consolation is that the media seemed to believe those polls as well, as did, in fact, both campaigns. If you looked at some of their early coverage, you saw the Kerry campaign quite excited and the Bush campaign quite down, in fact. But there is a disconnect between those exit polls and the final result, and I've already gotten many, many emails from you folks suggesting that, in fact, it is not the exit polls that are flawed, it is the final results that are flawed, as they're occurring in ways without paper records, without receipts. And I guess I would say that's certainly possible. There certainly were dirty tricks played by the Republicans in this election to try to steal the vote. We know that in 2000, they did. I mean, there's really little dispute about the fact that more Americans, more Floridians, voted for Gore than for Bush, and that the Supreme Court opinion was against the law, against the Constitution. And I was very angry at that time. Indeed, it propelled me to change my career and to help go to Washington and see what I could do to make a difference. I'm not so much angry today as sad. Sad, I guess, because I'm accepting the result rather than angry and challenging the result. I would say that certainly those of you that want to I've seen, in fact, some of you talking about people filing a Freedom of Information Act investigation to find out what is the disconnect between the exit polls and the results. Absolutely. Go ahead. Find out. As I told our resident conspiracy theorist, Dave, from California, such conspiracies in 2000. And I think the score should be checked out. We should find the score. Find out who really won. And I don't think Republicans should be upset with this any more than I'd be upset if I were playing a game and I were winning and someone wanted to check my score. Hey, absolutely. If I'm ahead, well, I shouldn't mind showing my score. I may have made a mistake in addition, and if I did, hey, then I shouldn't be winning. So this should be checked out. We should check out and make sure everything was done fairly. That being said, I, at least, until we see such an investigation, you know, have to accept reality. I have to accept the fact that a 51% majority of Americans, a very small majority really in the scheme of things, decided to elect this president, George Bush, and that he was elected. 4 years ago, he was not elected. That's why he wasn't reelected this time. 4 years ago, he was selected by the Supreme Court. The question I have for all of you is, where do we go from here? What's next? I want to spend this hour sort of commiserating a bit, talking about the future, and finding out where we go from here. What went right? What do we do to try to really keep American values strong? It's hard. I have to say, it is hard. John Kerry, as most losing candidates do, called for healing, and that's all well and good. But, of course, we have the most divisive president in American history. This is a president who, when he was selected in 2000, talked immediately about working with Democrats and so forth, and then within a few months showed that it was all a lie, it was all a ruse. He would pretend to work with Democrats, but in fact, he never, and I worked in Congress, I know this, he never worked with Democrats. He tricked a few of them. He tricked Ted Kennedy into the No Child Left Behind Act and then didn't fund it. And since then, he would maybe pick off one or two Democrats, but not really work with Democrats at all. He ruled as if he had a mandate. And now, God help us all, he really perhaps does. So what do we do with a president leading a 51% majority of American people that is indeed out to divide America, that is indeed out not to work with us? I fully expect the president to say, he's probably saying it right now, how much he wants to work with Democrats. And I fully expect in 2 months, when Chief Justice Rehnquist leaves the court, there to be a bloodbath with George Bush wanting to appoint the most right-wing radical justices ever. People who no doubt will be against American civil rights, will be against equal rights for all, because that's what most of his judges want, Scalia and Thomas and so forth. And certainly he will appoint someone who wants to overturn Roe v. Wade. And maybe that's as it should be. Maybe that's as it should be. After all, the most interesting result of this election, to me, was why people voted for George Bush. They certainly didn't vote on the economy, and they certainly didn't vote on the war in Iraq, and they certainly didn't vote on that they trusted him, although maybe they did. If they did, then they really weren't following what's going on. No, they voted for him primarily because they were fundamentalist Christian conservatives who believe that the government has to... Obviously, that's who Karl Rove was playing for. That's who the political strategists were trying to go out after. They never tried for the middle. They were trying for the most fundamentalist, religious, Christian Americans who wanted very much to control all of our lives. And I want to be clear, I'm not in any way attacking religion. I happen to take my own religious faith quite seriously. But for me, and I think for many people in America, religious faith is a, shield, is a cloak, is a way to protect ourselves from the difficulties of living in this world we live in with all its ups and downs. And my fear is not anyone who uses religion as a shield, as a blanket, as a way of comfort, but those who use religion as a sword. There is no question in my mind that one of the major differences in this race, and remember, it was very, very close, whether it's 100,000 or 140,000 votes in Ohio, and I actually think most provisional ballots will probably go for Kerry, so it'll probably be under 100,000, but whatever the figure is, the difference appears to be the fact that they put on the most radically anti-gay provision, referendum, in Ohio, and people came out in droves to vote for it, particularly right-wing religious conservatives. People like the Amish, who have never registered to vote, went out... I don't know what's right and wrong. No, they wanted to teach all of us what's right or wrong, and indeed punish us. A gay couple wants to live and love each other. It's wrong, and they must suffer for it. They must suffer with higher taxes. They must suffer with the most cruel form of suffering, which is when one is dying and the other one is not allowed to visit them in the hospital as they're dying. You got to remember, this point of view is quite powerful. This view of we need to control other people's lives. It is very, very powerful, and it is what won this election, and we have to respect it for what it is. The majority of Americans wants to control what the minority do with their lives. And they have a right to think that, and we have a right to fight back, to say, you know what, even if you are the majority, treat us unequally. And, you know, it's a very powerful thing. You have to remember, in history, the solid South was solidly Democratic. And as soon as the Democratic Party adopted civil rights, it took a period of time, but now we have the solid Republican South. Because poor whites in the South do not vote their economic interests. If they did, they would vote for the Democratic Party. Instead, they vote against the party that blacks support. And I don't mean to say it's that simple or it's that clear or that that's the only reason people vote. Look at the main difference in the South between the solid Democratic South and the solid Republican South. It's not our economic policies that's changed anything. The Democratic Party hasn't changed in that way. They've always been against big business, big corporations. They've always been on behalf of the little guy. It's standing up for civil rights. Standing up for civil rights lost us this election. And Some will say that we should therefore abandon our principles of civil rights. I say no. I say we have to stick with them. Why? Their religious faith belongs to them and is precious, but cannot be imposed on the rest of us. I understand those that want to impose. Well, then you don't have to think outside the box, right? Everything works for you. And you want to share that. I've had so many people want to share their religious faith with me, and I don't mind people discussing religious faith, but actually want to convert me to their religious faith. And indeed, the Muslims that form the Taliban have the same goal. They don't and have to follow their orders. Sure, they're different principles, and I don't mean to say the Southern Baptists are terrorists, but neither was all of the Taliban either. The point is, when religion is used as a sword and not as a shield, it's expected. That part that says that we don't have to follow and do everything you say. There's so much to talk about here, and I don't mean to be rambling. Let me go ahead and give the numbers out. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. What did you think about this election? I mean, everything from the voters standing out in the rain, the long, long lines in Ohio. Some people waited 11 or 12 hours in drenching rain, risking their health at least. If not, hey, for an elderly person, I assume would be risking their life. And yes, it is true that those very long lines tended to be in Democratic precincts. They tended to be in large cities. That's where they were. And that could be classified as a dirty trick. That may have been the difference. You think at least they could let the people come in and keep warm. But I think it should be easier to vote in America than it was. I do have my complaints. At the same time, I recognize that somehow we have to move on. Let me go to the caller, and we'll see what you have to say. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hi, Mark. This is Bert from Minnesota.
Hey, Bert.
It could be better.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm optimistic. I want to talk a little bit about what we need to do now. And to do that, let me do a quick anecdote. For the last 2 weeks, really getting big in the last 2 weeks, I've been on this email discussion group with members of my fraternity back in Kansas. And I explained to them, one of them posted up this white right-wing garbage about how John Kerry is for the DNX procedure, what they call misnamed as the partial birth abortion, and how John Kerry is for it and Bush is against it. And I explained to these people in terms of a patient that I had what the DNX is, why it is we have it, why it is procedure. I mean, the analogy would be like simply reaching up to change a light bulb versus climbing up on your roof, cutting a hole in it, and then reaching down. You don't do a DNX unless you have to.
No one purposely tries to kill babies. That's not the goal of the Democratic Party any more than it's our goal, as they put in an ad in Arkansas and West Virginia. To take away people's Bibles.
Right, and that's a conversation against abortion. This is more specific against what's known as partial birth abortion, in which you deliver the baby anyway.
Bert, please speak loudly and into the phone, if you would.
Oh, I'm
kind of fading in and out a bit. But I understand your point about partial. Bert, please speak loudly and into the phone, if you would.
Oh, I'm
kind of fading in and out a bit. But I understand your point about partial birth abortion. When I worked in Congress, we had a bill on partial birth abortion, and we Democrats had an amendment, and we said we will agree to ban partial birth abortion as long as there's an exception made for the life or the severe, and this is the only way to prevent her from being in chronic pain for the rest of her life, that we should take the woman who's actually here above the potential life that might actually come about.
Yes.
And of course the Republicans voted no. They voted that the potential life was more valuable than the woman that was existing. And
it brought about a whole different conversation, no longer about just the talking points that the Republicans wanted to say. I mean, there was really shades of gray here. Maybe there were such cases where this procedure could be justified. And I think that's what we need to be doing over the next 2 or 4 years.
I'll tell you, it's hard. One of the things I know is single reason, above all, for George Bush's support. And true, those people would then try to manufacture some support of the war in Iraq or some justification for the bad economy, and they would seek some rationalization. But when you scratched really hard underneath what was really pushing them, it was there to be protected. Now, many of these kids, and they were mostly kids I was talking to, hadn't heard my continuing argument, which was, if you want to protect the fetus, then can we at least agree on protecting babies, too? You know, the idea that we actually need to provide child care, for example, for mothers that we removed their welfare check and said you have to work on workfare. And many of them, some of them actually hadn't heard it before, would agree, and some of them said, no, that's the woman's responsibility. And it just struck me that they're more concerned with a life form that can't think or feel in any real human way that we know, mm-hmm. over something that we know does think and feel in human ways that we know.
And there's an interesting double standard. If you ask them about in vitro fertilization, and just for the benefit of your listeners, it's when you take some eggs from the mom, like a half a dozen or however many, and you fertilize them, and then you get a slew of cells that look, you know, they're fertilized. You take the six best ones or so, put them into mom. What happens to all those others? They die. Whether or not they go on to be used in stem cells or just thrown down the biohazard bag, they still are going to die.
I wonder if
murderers
people
who are trying to have a family, these murderers, these evil people.
Well, Bert, I wonder if pro-lifers would want to take all those embryos and put them all in surrogate mothers and raise them. I mean, I don't know if that's been offered them.
I don't know whether that's the angle, but I think it's a lot easier to marginalize, for political reasons, to marginalize someone who got pregnant before married than it is to marginalize.
It's moral to want to use your religion as a sword to deny other people equality under the law. I would rather call it fundamentalist religious values as being a more accurate description of the term.
You have as a moral that it's okay for other people to have different morals.
That's right.
But a lot of people,
I have as a moral tolerance.
I come from Kansas,
right.
And there, where faith without works is dead, you have to do your best to influence the other people, and more than just influencing them, also coercing them.
Yep.
To undercut abortion rights, to undercut reproductive rights. I mean, these people don't understand that without reproductive rights, a woman could technically be forced to have an abortion. The only thing preventing us from doing it is that a woman has the right to choose.
Well, Bert, I don't know that I'd go that far. You can fall one way and not fall the other way. But clearly what they're saying, in fact, is if a woman is raped, she can be raped against her will and then forced not just to suffer that, but to suffer, you know, 9 months, and then presumably would have to raise the child of the rapist as her own, or I don't know, put it up for adoption. I want to get to a larger point, though. I want to get to a larger point on the election. My question is, how do you get through the spin bites? I hear it all the time on the news, right? Partial birth abortion, baby killing, anti-religious values, blah, 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 blah. Spin, 20 seconds, and you're out. And
I have a parallel. I'm big in the creation evolution issues that, you know, scientists dispute Darwin. You hear this, that, and the other, and they make this lovely presentation in about 10 minutes, and they turn to the opposition, the people, the pro-science people, and say, okay, respond to us. You get 10 minutes. And it doesn't work. Asserts something is always going to have the advantage of someone who then has to go out and explain the broader details.
But, Bert, we don't have 10 minutes. We don't even have 5 minutes. We don't even have 1 minute.
We've got to get it.
Well, we can't. I'll tell you, I talked with a guy last night who was a Bush supporter, and it was before we knew the results of the election, and I mentioned the problems that were going on in Ohio. And the problems of the court allowing the challengers in, and he didn't, instead of arguing my point of whether the challengers should be there or not, he simply said, I don't agree with your views, and I don't want to talk to you anymore about it. And I think we have a lot of walls. We have people living in two different worlds. Talk about two different Americas that Edwards was talking about. We have people that listen to Fox News, listen to Rush Limbaugh, read Matt Drudge, and actually believe they're reading and learning the truth.
Yeah.
And some 76% of Bush supporters believe that Saddam Hussein caused 9/11.
Yeah, and look at Swift Boat Veterans for Truth, where the documented Navy records from 30 in the end of the story. They were taking fire. John Kerry's right. Swift Boat Veterans for Truth are wrong. What came out in the media? equal time.
And this is a very old problem. This is a problem, as I said, I've talked on the show before. I did a paper on Joe McCarthy. That's exactly what Joe McCarthy would do. He'd say, this person is a communist. And the person would say, I'm not a communist. And then the newspaper would print both charges. And yep. What's interesting to me, though, is if you flip it, think about it, if the candidates were reversed. Let's say the Democratic candidate had never denied using cocaine. Let's say the Democratic candidate was a draft dodger. Let's say the Democratic candidate used special influence to get out of a war and then didn't show up for duty. Imagine, if you will, the right-wing echo chamber and what they would say about such a Democratic candidate.
That's right, yeah.
All you have to do is, and then compare that, if the Republican candidate were a hero decorated with medal after medal after medal, documented Navy documents, and we attacked that hero, suggesting that hero was not a hero. Mm-hmm. I mean, Ann Coulter would have called us a traitor simply for attacking him, much less mentioning his medals. There's a disconnect here, and the disconnect is this. I think that people on our side of the aisle are really looking for truth.
That's right.
I think
you're
that people
right.
on the other side of the aisle, some of them are. Now, I don't want to attack all conservatives here. There are definitely conservatives that are looking to find the facts. In fact, most of those types of conservatives listen to this show, and I welcome them for doing that, trying to find the facts. And frankly, one of the things you
Nathan
learn as a lawyer.
On your blog, Nathan said he started listening to you and other people because he wanted to hear the other side, to see what people
exactly.
like us, why we think the way we do.
Exactly. And one of the things that I think we find out as lawyers is that it's often through the battle of both sides of an idea that you reach some value of truth in between. But I want to, if you'll just hold on, Bert, I want to get others involved. Call in toll-free 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Let me know what you're feeling today, how you're feeling, what you're thinking. Do you think America can heal this red-blue divide? You know, we really aren't so different from 2000. The only state that has changed thus far is New Hampshire. Mexico will go the other way. But we are living in a red and blue America. We are living in a country that has the coasts believing one thing and the middle believing something else. What can we do to heal this country and at the same time stay true to our values? I want to hear from you. I want to hear your ideas. I also want to read some of the really great comments on the blog. We're going to do all of that after this commercial break. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Think that the Bushites had no post-war plan for what they would do in Iraq after our military ousted Saddam? Think again. You can see their plan in the extremist economic policies that were quietly and autocratically imposed on the Iraqi people during the reign of L. Paul Bremer III, who was our occupying czar there. While America's media establishment has been focused on the raging war by Iraqi insurgents and by the Bushites' attempt to enthrone a puppet government there, the neocon laissez-faire zealots in the administration have been gleefully using this ravaged country as their own ideological playground. For years, these Ayn Randian theorists have longed to create their utopia of a corporate state, and they've used the IMF, World Bank, WTO, and other monkey wrenches to try to implement their theories in Latin America and elsewhere. But they've never had an entire economy at their disposal until they grabbed Iraq. While Baghdad was burning, Bremer arrived. Rather than putting out the fires, he used them as a distraction to issue decrees that instantly opened up Iraq to a total corporate takeover. For example, his decrees open up all of that nation's public assets to foreign corporate ownership, and they allow 100% of the country's industries, from banking to food, to be owned by foreigners. Also, Bremer ruled that 100% of the profits that foreign investors make in Iraq can now be hauled out of the country. There's no requirement that any of these profits be reinvested there, nor that the investors have to pay even a dime in taxes on the profits they haul away. This isn't liberation, as the Bushites call their Iraqi adventure. It's legalized looting and is fueling the continuing anger and armed resistance by the Iraqi people, who are determined not to have their nation looted. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get this full story, see Naomi Klein's explosive article in Harper's Magazine. You can read it at harpers.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time, so I earn flights three times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of the standard 0.5.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine. It is the day after the election, and we're talking about it. We're talking about the past. That is, all those voters standing in line in the rain, drenching rain. Did you see those lines? Some of them, some students at Kenyon, waited 11 and 12 hours. One girl, I saw her on the news. I shouldn't call her a girl because she's over 18. But she got in line at 10:30 a.m., voted at 9 p.m. Another got in line at 7 p.m., voted at 4 a.m. These are the hardy ones. Imagine someone who's up in age, in the 80s, trying to vote in this Democratic precinct. They really weren't allowed to. We've got to fix our voting systems. Why weren't they fixed? Well, it's pretty easy to know. We tried to fix them. I worked on it. I was in the House Judiciary Committee. We proposed fixes. Ohio, it would have cost $60 million. It would have cost about one-tenth of the cost of one day in Iraq. But for a tenth of the cost of one day of funding our war in Iraq, we weren't willing to protect democracy in America. And so, yes, I am still upset about the past. I admit it. I'm upset by how hard it was to get people to vote, by the Ohio Secretary of State, who at first wanted paper to be of a certain weight. The fact that he insisted that if you vote outside your precinct, you lose your right to vote. What's with that? What's with that? You vote outside your precinct and you lose your right to vote? Your right to vote is less important than getting your precinct right? I don't know what it is. We've got to look at the past, and we've got to keep focusing on that way. But we also have to focus on the future. Where do we go from here? We have a world that hates us, that really hates us in a way that it never has before. And we've got a really no exit strategy in Iraq to this day. And we've got a president in a country that needs our help. Forget the president, but the country needs our help. We can't just give up on America and go to Canada. What do we do? The young people didn't show up. I guess they did vote in the same numbers as everyone else. They increased their voting like everyone did, but not more so. We didn't get 120 million voters. We got 114 million. But the thing that I find most interesting in all of this is who showed up at the polls. Because, and this is my speculation, but I think it's borne out, because there was a provision on the ballot banning gay marriage, and not just gay marriage, but any sort of legal protection for gay people, basically putting gay people as official second-class citizens in Ohio. Because of that provision, which won in a very large majority, people who had never come to vote came out to vote. It was a very clever thing by the authors of that provision to use the dislike and distrust of gay people among Christian conservatives and the belief that somehow the sanctity of marriage, civil marriage, state marriage was threatened, or the sanctity of their religious marriage was threatened because two gay people could get an Ohio license at a courthouse. That belief sent them out in droves, and yes, they voted for George Bush, and yes, we lost by 100,000 so are in Ohio. What do we do about a Republican Party whose increasingly focus is God, gays, and guns. God, gays, and guns. Pro-God, pro-gun, anti-gay. I mean, one of the things I find most interesting is that in that they share the same values as the Taliban, who's also pro-Allah, pro-gun, and anti-gay. I understand it. I understand the belief, hey, we were attacked. Those vicious Muslims attacked us. We're going to attack them. You kill our children, we'll kill your children. We'll show you. We'll kill 100,000 Iraqi civilians. We won't even blink. We won't even notice. We'll get you. We'll round up every last Muslim. We'll put them in prisons. We won't give them a Bill of Rights. We won't give them trials. We'll just accuse them of everything. Hell, we'll even torture the ones in Abu Ghraib prison. And we'll do it because we're going to win this crusade. I understand that thought. I understand that when a vicious terrorist attacks and kills 3,000 innocent Americans, you want to fight back hard. And I really fear that some are taking the Islamic Jihad that some Muslims, many Muslims, too many Muslims have declared against Americans, and are turning around and declaring a Christian Jihad against the Muslims, Orthodox Jewish Jihad as well. If we're going to bring this country together, how do we get out of the Jihad mentality? The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I'm saving Bert. I'm going to another caller, though. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine.
Hi, Mark. This is Nathan from Ohio.
Hello, Nathan from Ohio. Actually calling in. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I can say I'm very surprised today, and I'm a little bit uneasy. It's not so much George Bush. I didn't expect the Senate to go so overwhelmingly Republican. I didn't expect the gay marriage ban to fail all across the country. I am concerned about where the country's going.
And what do you think we need to do?
I really don't know. I did post on the blog. I was talking with James a little bit about, you know, what the Democratic Party could do to reach out to people like me and other people who just don't understand what the Democratic Party really stands for. You know, there's no gray area in between in a lot of debates between Republicans and Democrats that, you know, both sides just see their view and they're not willing to meet anywhere in the middle.
I think that is a major problem. I really do. And it didn't used to be that way. 10, 20, 30 years ago, there was a lot of bipartisan legislation. There was a lot of reaching across the aisle. I actually think after 9/11, I was there in Congress when it happened, I think that the Democrats really did reach out to the Republicans to work together in the immediate 2-3 months after September 11th for the good of all Americans.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I have to say, and by the way, many Republicans in Congress also worked with us. Let me praise one of them. Chairman Sensenbrenner, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which I worked on. This is a guy who was one of the impeachment managers. But we worked together. My boss, Barney Frank, worked with Sensenbrenner, and they came up with the most incredible act that the Republicans later called the Patriot Act. But it was an act in our version, the version that came out of the House Judiciary Committee, that amazingly everyone from Maxine Waters to Bob Barr to Lamar Smith, right, left, in between, we agreed on a compromise that would fight the terrorists and still protect American civil liberties. And we were so proud of ourselves. It was right after 9/11. I'll never forget this because I never saw it any other time in Congress. When it was done, everyone in the room stood up, including the members of Congress, and gave themselves a standing ovation. We came up with a bill 35-0, and this was the most right-wing and left-wing committee in Congress. And, of course, just a couple weeks after that, that particular version of the Patriot Act was thrown away, and Ashcroft's version was substituted in its place. And that left a lot of people very upset, thinking, you know, if you're not going to work with us after 9/11, when are you going to work with us? And my fear, Nathan, my real fear is that the president is going to give a beautiful speech about working with Democrats and then in 2 months is going to nominate a far right-wing justice to the United States Supreme Court, and then there'll be a Democratic filibuster, and then all this goodwill, this post-election goodwill, to the extent that it exists, will be gone out the window in 2 months. And I don't know what to say except that I know you're concerned about it. I know I'm concerned about it. How do we let people know that believing in faith is a good thing? It's a fine thing. It's just not a fine thing to impose your faith on someone else.
Well, I'm not sure, and that's what I was getting on your blog, is that, you know, a year ago today, I had the exact same morals that I still have today. I just had a complete different way of looking at government now. And I just don't know how to, aside from sitting down with everybody and talking to them one-on-one, I don't know how to get that across to other people.
Well, actually, I think a lot of good can be done sitting and talking with each other one-on-one.
Yeah, and that's why I say it can't just be the candidate, you know, running a commercial saying something. It's that all Democrats, all conservatives have to work together. And I'm not talking about just Congress. I'm talking about all over the country.
Sure, sure. But what do we do when... I mean, I know there are – listen, there's some liberals in red states. I was interested to note that some 20 or 25% of Utahns voted for Kerry, and some 30% of people in Massachusetts voted for Bush. So we are not as divided into red states and blue states as you would think. But nonetheless, there is this red state, blue state ethos. There is. There's no question about it. Most of us hang out with people who agree with us. And I don't – you know, what do you do when – I'm listening to NPR, and he's listening to Fox News, and it's like we live in two different parallel universes.
Yeah, and that's the real problem, is that, you know, I've lived in Ohio, which is actually very, very, can't think of the word. It's mixed.
Well, it is. After look at it was on the knife's edge in this election, right? I mean, Ohio is a state that's pretty purple, let's say, rather than red or blue.
Yeah, and I've lived here my whole life, and, you know, it was just this year that I really started to see things with an open mind. And, you know, I've known Democrats my whole life. I've actually been somewhat political, you know, as far as trying to know the issues and debate people and things like that. But I never actually tried to see the other side until this year.
And what made you try to see the other side? What led you to do that?
Honestly, I really don't know. I just said, you know, I want to know. I want to be more informed for this election, and I want to see, you know, what both sides are thinking.
Nathan, I want you to hang on. I want to get many callers. We're going to have a massive conference call here, and let's all try to talk with each other. Bert's hanging on, but before I get back to you, Bert, let me bring in a new caller to the discussion. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and with Nathan from Ohio. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hi, this is Mike from Alabama.
Mike from?
Alabama.
Alabama. Okay, Mike, what do you want to add to this discussion?
I'm just afraid somebody like Judge Roy Moore is going to end up on the Supreme Court of the U.S.
Well, I think it's quite likely that someone like I think that that's exactly who George Bush would appoint.
See, that makes my heart hurt when you say that. I get cold inside when you say that. I mean, I fear it.
Well, I fear it, too. And I have to say that the Democrats, just because we lost this election, doesn't mean we should stop standing up for our principles. I fully expect Democrats in the Senate to filibuster if they try to appoint someone like Roy Moore. And I know that's going to cause the whole world, you know, to, you know, the nuclear option, all these things we've discussed on our show, and all the animosity to come back. But it seems to me that Bush, in a nation that, I don't, maybe it's 51-48 instead of 50-50, but it's close enough that it seems to me that he shouldn't go to the far right wing of his base. Instead, he should pick someone who can be a fair judge, who can fairly apply the law, maybe a moderate conservative rather than a far right wing conservative. And if he doesn't, I think the Democrats have got to fight back. They can't be cowed by this election. Nathan, do you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think the real problem is that, you know, the partisanship, wherever it started, it kind of got into, you know, which party can outdo the other party. Like, well, they're going to get their extremists, so we have to get our extremists to counter that. And
I'll tell you part of the problem with that, Nathan, and is that this sort of frankly, it's exactly against Christian teaching, right? Which is if someone hits you on the cheek, you're supposed to turn the other cheek. What you find in politics is that, I'm sorry to say it, nice guys finish last. I think, frankly, one of the problems with the Democratic Convention, and I said it at the time, and some of you thought I was going a little wild, but I thought we were too nice. If you remember it, George Bush was hardly mentioned in the whole convention. I don't think his name was mentioned five times by all the speakers. And sure, there was criticism, but it was generally what the Democrats were going to do, and some were harsher than others. Jimmy Carter was one of the harsher ones. But certainly John Kerry and John Edwards gave a very positive convention. and then turned around, came the Republican convention, extremely negative, the whole flip-flopping stuff. And again, I don't mind attacking John Kerry on his views. That's perfectly fair. But it's the sort of mocking, I don't know. It strikes me that when you go negative, that not only do Americans listen, they say they don't, they say they want positive campaigning, not only do they listen to the negative attacks, but I heard just recently a bunch of undecided voters say right after the Republican convention, both sides went negative. Whereas right after the Democratic convention, they mentioned how positive it was. People forget.
Yes, but during the news, they were saying, the Republicans kept saying, oh, they're going negative, oh, they're going negative.
Yep,
Republicans, they spin a song, and everybody listens to it. How do you fight that?
Well, go ahead, Nathan.
This is Michael. It's lies. They say lies, and the news runs with it.
Well, here's how I fight it, Michael. I fight it, frankly, by doing exactly what I'm doing. After the first selection, which really made me upset, I quit my job as a trialer. I started working in Congress, and then I kept seeing all the stuff going on in Congress that no one found out about. And here I am at the mic, and I guess it's really a plea for my show. I'll tell you, I did have a syndicator tell me, well, I guess if George Bush wins, your show will be more necessary, more popular. And maybe so, I said, but I really am fighting then against my show but the thing is that with the Republicans controlling the Senate in such a large way that they do now, and the House in such a large way, and the Supreme Court, and the President, and they have their own echo chamber in the press that, frankly, we in the left don't have. I know some of you think CNN and CBS is it. I'm sorry. I think CBS and CNN try to be fair to both sides. I don't think we have any real left-wing people out there.
I think that's the problem we have with the Democratic Party in a whole, is that we try to play fair.
I think that's right. I think that's right. And now we're being asked after this election to play fair. And I'm not against playing fair. The question is if you play fair and, you know, and someone slaps you on the chin, you get slapped again, then what do we do? And what do we do in a nation that increasingly believes in this using religion as a sword? I mean, Mike, you're in Alabama. You probably feel it more, certainly more than I do.
To be honest with you, I can't tell you. I get in discussions with this with people where I go to church, and I tell them, look, religion is not part of government. It is wholly separate. What's going to happen one day down the road when, okay, they've gotten rid of the gays and the blacks and the Jews, and now it's the Catholics?
Yeah, one of the things that interests me, I'm very much a student of history, and it always interests me how sort of persecution things start. And it always struck me that in the South, sure, blacks were completely mistreated and they were slaves and it was awful, but also who was mistreated were poor whites. If you look at the South before the Civil War, you find the poor whites fought in the Confederacy, not the rich ones. They could buy their way out. The poor whites fought for the
problem that we have had after the war is when the Civil War ended, suddenly all those poor whites were no better than their black brethren.
Well, that's the thing. They were fighting whites, but they fought for other people's interests just so they could feel better than someone else. And I don't know how you could ever join poor whites and mostly poor blacks together again in a common interest. I think some unions have succeeded in that. But
I think you could walk around anywhere in the South right now and ask anybody how they voted for Bush, and you could find out the answer as to how they fought in that war.
How they fought in
the Civil War, because it's the same thing. When a man with a job is voting for a Republican, it's the same thought process that put him in the Civil War.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. You're from Alabama, right?
Yeah.
You're born and bred there?
Yeah.
What led you to come away with a different conclusion from most of the people around you?
I don't know. I think.
Okay. I mean, but here's my problem. Here's my problem, okay? I would say that, too. I've said it on the air. I've said it some ways in nice ways and some ways in not-so-nice ways. But part of my problem is this. I think there is an anti-intellectual strain in the Republican Party where they say, oh, well, no, you people, I mean, you know, Mark, you went to all these good Ivy League schools. You're, you know, intellectual. I don't want to hear all that nonsense. You know, you just think we're a bunch of ignorant bumpkins. I'm not going to listen to you. How do you say to someone without completely insulting them, you're not thinking clearly?
I don't know, and that's why I get in fights down here with folks.
Mark, I'm not so sure that that's fair, because
okay.
I think there are a lot of good ideas in both parties. I think Democrats have a lot of good ideas. I think Republicans have a lot of good ideas. And just to say, you know, you voted for George Bush, you're not thinking.
Well, I'm not...
I,
I'm not saying that, and that's a fair point, Nathan. I'm not saying, oh, you voted for George Bush. You're willing to even listen to the other side. It's like they're living in a dream. It's like the ones that believe that Saddam Hussein caused 9/11.
Well, yeah, and that was one of my other questions I was going to ask is, what can the American public do from a legal standpoint to cut down on the misinformation in campaigns?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Here's how it works. The way it works is, as in our Constitution, which is the only one we've got, and it's imperfect, but it's the best we've got, is you have branches of government watching each other. The Congress is watching the President, according to the Constitution, which, after all, wasn't planned with the idea of parties in mind. And the Constitution and the Senate is watching the House, and they're watching each other, and both are watching the President, and the courts are watching everyone, and then you have federal and state governments, to some extent, watching each other. And, of course, the press, watching everyone, and everyone watching the press. Unfortunately, every single one of them now is controlled by one party. Not completely the press, not completely state governments, but largely most of our institutions of power are all controlled by one party. And it's striking to me that during the Clinton years, when you had Travelgate and Filegate and Whitewater and all this stuff that they said Clinton did, some of which amazed me, she filed a travel agent that became a gate. They had more than 1,000 subpoenas issued on the Clinton administration. Why? Because Republicans controlled Congress. And one statistic, and I've asked it out before, see if you two remember, how many subpoenas has the Republican Congress issued on George W. Bush?
They haven't issued any, have they?
That's correct. The answer is zero.
And yeah, so I win.
We all lose. Let me bring Bert in, too. We're going to have sort of a three-way discussion here. Bert, you have a comment on what we've been talking about?
I certainly do. Once again, I have a parallel from the creation-evolution thing. One of the things you can do to fight this groundswell of support for the Republicans, even though it's against their economic interests, is to take away their base. And here's how you do that. You educate them. For example, when I speak as a Christian and I tell them about evolution, and pretty soon they start hearing what's really going on, the fingers come out of the ears, they say, wait a minute, I thought evolution meant I couldn't believe in God. Suddenly they're more open to the idea of discussion and they vote for pro-science candidates. I think that the solution to this is education. Have more Mark Levines and more Air Americas. Get people to understand why a DNX is a procedure that doctors need to be able to perform. Why it is that tax cuts, and good times, bad times, war, 9/11, all this stuff is a bad way of doing it. Even though it's what we like to hear, why it's a responsible thing to not think that way.
Well, let me ask all three of you a question. I know all three of you listen to my show fairly regularly. I have had on this show, on my election Tuesdays, certainly people I disagree with, certainly Republicans. A couple weeks ago, I had the talk show host Alan Nathan on my show, and I felt that every time I tried to engage him in a discussion to actually discuss how we felt about certain issues, he turned it into talking points. I would try to talk about the explosives that were found in Iraq and what's been done or hasn't been done, and he would somehow turn that into Kerry's a flip-flopper. And, you know, we can discuss that if you want, but that wasn't the issue I was even raising. How do you talk to someone when they've got this wall? Or is the answer, we just don't talk to those people, we have to talk to the people who are willing to engage in discussion? Any one of you?
How do you score basketball goals against the Harlem Globetrotters if you're the Washington Bullets playing them? I mean, the point in certain forums, the point is not an actual, a rivalry with the best one winning. Some of the times, when you watch the Harlem Globetrotters, the point isn't the other team scores. It's that, hey, the Harlem Globetrotters won. So you have to be careful about what you get into. Do you have an even-handed debate where each side gets one a particular amount of time? Well, then the people that have the more work to do, they're going to lose. The ones who have, they simply have to assert something and everyone's going to cheer and yell and clap for the Harlem Globetrotters, they're going
to
win.
Let me go back to Mike in Alabama. Mike...
Well, I think it's more of a case of trying to score basketball goals against the Green Bay Packers. I mean, when you say something out there and you want to discuss this and they try to turn it to someplace else.
Yeah, it's apples and oranges. You're not even talking to each other.
You can't let them do that. You've got to say, well, that's not the point. It has to do with this. This is what we're talking about. You got to get them back on track. And they don't want to go on track because they've got no point there they can go to.
Well, what's just interesting to me is the people that just sort of end the discussion and say, I don't want to discuss it anymore. It's like they want to discuss it until you reach a point where they actually might have to change their views,
yeah.
And then they run. And one of the things, Nathan, I got to give you credit for is you've been willing to take me on and most of the listeners here who mostly don't agree with you on the blog, on the show, and I've got to say I really respect you for doing that. And I maybe, believe it or not, we actually are fellow travelers in the sense that I'm the kind of guy that I go to a protest, and instead of hanging out with the people I agree with, I always go with the people I disagree with. I find that to be a lot more interesting kind of a discussion.
It's a lot more exciting.
You guys are curious. You guys are both curious. I mean, did you read the vision? He has faith in it. He puts the same faith in his religious views as he does in, say, going to war in Iraq, and no data you can ever show him is going to convince him of that he's wrong. And that is comforting. You know, it's nice to see a leader who's that sure of his decision, but it leads to trouble. And Nathan is making apparatuses, and that's why, I mean, Nathan is curious. Not everyone is curious. People sometimes just want faith.
And I guess my question is how do you approach such people? Or is the answer that we give up on those people and try to approach people who have open minds?
Actually,
no, I
try to use those people.
Hold on, Bert. Mike, go ahead.
I try to use those people to talk to the folks around them, because once you can show the people around those people that they don't really have an argument, then maybe you can convince other people.
I think that's a good point, Mike.
You can't convince a rock not to be a rock, but maybe you can convince, you know, all the people around them that, hey, this is just a rock. This has nothing really important to say.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to do this show is I wanted to let the dialogue begin. I think all three of you have helped me in that. I want to thank each of the three of you and ask you to keep listening in, keep contributing to the blog, and just keep listening to the Inside Scoop. I really appreciate all three of you. Thank you all.
Thanks, Mark. Bye, Mark.
We need you.
Well, that was three devoted listeners, and I think they had some really good ideas for how we at least start the healing. It can't be a capitulation, all right? One of my fears is that when Republicans say, oh, well, John Kerry needs to concede and talk about working with Republicans, that they see it as a capitulation. George Bush has a mandate. We have to do everything he wants because he won the election. Well, even 51-48 is not that much of a mandate when 100,000 voters in Ohio can change for one or the other. George Bush didn't even get 300 electoral votes. Now, I know he's going to walk it off like it's a landslide. It seems to me that the only way to get dialogue going is not to retreat on your principles, but to explain your principles, because you know what? It's not a zero-sum game. It's not, oh, if we get what we want, then you don't get what you want. There are ways to work together. There are ways to compromise. And it's amazing to me, as a staffer who worked as an attorney on the House Judiciary Committee, what we accomplished with the Patriot Act should have been front page news. Front page news. Democrats and Republicans on the most divisive committee, and by the way, the Judiciary Committee tends to attract the most liberal of the liberals and the most conservative of the conservatives. There is a reason why Maxine Waters and Barney Frank and Lamar Smith and Bob Barr were on that committee, because what does it deal with, that committee? It deals with abortion and guns and civil rights and all the issues that really divide us on religion, all religious issues. But when we got together, we devised a compromise Patriot Act. Hey, the Democrats didn't like the term Patriot Act, but they were willing to accept the name. That's one of our compromises, in order to find a bill that would let us fight terrorists and at the same time protect civil rights. And it was amazing when we came together. You would think that would be front page news in the New York Times. But what people don't know is that to this day, no one except those of us that were there knows that that bill was thrown away, substituted another by John Ashcroft, and that's the Patriot Act that we have today. The old one we drafted, it's dead. It doesn't exist. We can work together. And I want to say to all of you that I'm going to take off a couple days, basically relax, rest, try to heal myself. I will be on the air this Sunday at 6 p.m., but I'm not giving up on what I have to do. I understand that now even more, with the Republicans controlling every lever of power in the federal government and having their own right-wing echo chamber, that it's very important that people like me and Air America and others get the word out. Because otherwise you are living, in effect, in the same... It's like living in the Soviet Union. You just... The government's always right. The government's always right. The government is not always right. And had John Kerry been elected, I pledge to you, I was going to tell you where I thought he was wrong. And obviously, now that George Bush has been elected, it is my job still to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. That is the check and balance. It's the only thing we have left. Free speech. I'm just a guy with a mic who knows a little bit about government, trying to get the word out. I'm going to keep doing that. And I just have to say, the way John Kerry said, don't lose the faith. Frankly, all of you are my band of brothers, like his. And we still got each other's back. I got your back, you got mine. As Americans, whether you agree, I know none of you agree with me all the time. But as Americans committed to discussing the issues, to an exchange of opinions, and hopefully in my best ways, not doing it crossfire style, not throwing out facts and statistics. I know I do that sometimes, usually with some of the debaters that I don't get a chance to have a discussion with, but that we can really get together and have it at some point. Maybe you have to heal for a week or so, but go out and have a long talk with someone you disagree with. And if they're not listening to you, well, you know, if there's no exchange of ideas, if you can't find a single thing to agree on, okay, part your ways. But I would think for most people, you can find some common ground. There is common ground here. We should all believe in basic principles of America and democracy.